You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to this THE podcast special at the Research Excellence Summit in Taichung, Taiwan. You join us outside the Millennium Hotel. I hope you can hear us above the insects and the cars going by. We've just come to the end of 2.5 days of intense discussion, hearing about some inspiring research strategies for enhancing reputation, and also seen the launch of the first ever Asia Pacific University rankings. My name's Chris Parr. I'm joined here by Holly Else, reporter, editorial director for Global Rankings, Phil Beatty, and Tim Zafula, head of content and engagement for the THE World Summit series, which was this year hosted by our partners for this event, China Medical University. As I say, we've had 2.5 days of pretty lively discussion, and some lively discussion in the trees behind us as well. Holly, what have been the lines that you've picked out? What caught your eye at this year's Research Excellence Summit?
Yeah, so there was lots of talk really about how governments in many countries are trying to push the innovation agenda and encourage universities to commercialise their research and work with industry, get more funding from industry. But we had some of the delegates here telling us that actually without funding for basic research, so fundamental science that answers questions that we don't know anything about, there really isn't any grounding to take science on to make more applied discoveries that can solve industry's problems. So we heard from Duncan Iverson, Deputy Vice-Chancellor for Research at the University of Sydney, who told us that the Australian government is one of the ones pushing this agenda, but is not backing up with any funding, so that makes it difficult for universities to try and do that. And also I spoke with our host nation university's president from China Medical University, who told us that in Taiwan the government is trying to develop the green energy sector and biotechnology industries, but is lacking the infrastructure and also the talent, so the researchers needed to do that and make that happen. So yeah, that's something I found really interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. A couple of countries mentioned there. I mean, there's been a focus on the Asia-Pacific region at this conference. It really is a very diverse region in terms of countries. There's different histories, different educational system, different priorities. And it was interesting, I think, to hear from the different perspectives. You mentioned there one of our keynote speakers, Wenhua Li, president of CMU, who sort of brought up many of the challenges facing Taiwan, too much bureaucracy, low investment in the system. They can't raise fees as much as they'd like, or you know, like to bring the money in that way. They can't do that. And indeed, limited talent pools of academics available to them. And you contrast that with what we heard from Sung Chul Shin, president of KAIST, who sort of threw his arms open on stage and said, if you're disappointed with funding in your country, then come to Korea. He sees it as a golden age for that nation. But I think despite those differences, Tim, there was a real sense here of sort of community in the room, a desire to build bridges. There's lots of talk about collaboration. And it is a diverse region, but one which has a lot in common too.
Yeah, I think there was definitely a big emphasis on how the research collaborations and the partnerships and the desire to further that could really kind of build some bridges over the really complex political relationships that obviously exist in this region, and the need to kind of share their research findings and sort of put that into the global knowledge economy was really strong. I don't think anyone really talked very much about kind of boosting national pride or their nation's reputation or standings in the rankings. The rankings are vital, and we saw that, you know, by the reception we got on last Tuesday night when we published the first Asia Pacific rankings, and everybody was immediately, you know, pouring through the pieces of paper to find their institution. But at the same time, in all the conversations we had, and it was interesting to me because we actually, when we were planning this summit, we did intend it to be really quite a very sort of professional, sort of management focused summit where different institutions could talk about how they're empowering their researchers and, you know, attracting the right talent and building the right cultures. But in fact, you know, there were quite a few people who really talked about the importance of teaching as well and the importance of their universities having a much more kind of holistic outlook in what they were doing, what they were representing to their communities, and how the impact of their research could be measured not just by citations and all the other, you know, metrics that we have, but also about, you know, how that has a direct impact upon the communities where the universities exist. And that was really striking. It wasn't what we were expecting at all.
No, indeed. And during some of the discussions of rankings we heard, I know, Holly, you reported on, you know, some of the other ways that the rankings could look to reflect the contributions that universities do make to their communities and to society in general. But Phil, since we're on rankings, we should probably come to you. This was the first year that THE has published a dedicated Asia-Pacific ranking. You could see at the launch, which was held at Asia University's Art Museum, everyone had their supplement engrossed in it, heads down, picking through it, some celebrations and some people sort of asking questions about how it was put together too. But it was a successful launch. Why did we do it?
Well, there's no question, Chris, that rankings are a very big deal in East Asia, in China, in Taiwan, in other East Asian countries, South Korea. There's a huge educational culture. There's a huge focus on hierarchy. So rankings are massively popular in this part of the world. But from Times Higher Education's perspective, we really wanted to just give a spotlight to a particularly dynamic region. We have the world rankings, we have an Asia ranking, but the Asia ranking really looks at the entire continent. So you're stretching right from the Middle East through to Central and Southern Asia and also into East and Southeast Asia. And we actually thought it was time for a clearer focus on a particular part of the world where there were strong cultural connections, obviously the natural time zone connections that you see between East Asia and Australasia. And of course this idea that the more traditional universities in Australasia could gain massively by capitalizing on the incredible investment in this part of the world, the incredible enthusiasm and growth around higher education. So it was an extra spotlight. But what we did find is an incredibly diverse list. The top 10 had five different nations represented, with 13 nations in our top 250. So there's a lot of diversity in the region, even though there are lots of commonalities.
Indeed, you can find all those results on timeshighereducation.com. Just follow the rankings links. You'll also be able to catch highlights from the summit on our YouTube channel. Search for Times Higher Education there. It might take a couple of days for those to go up, but do check back. And of course, you'll read all the coverage from the summit on timeshighereducation.com too. That's all for this podcast from us. We'll leave you with a few words from some of the delegates here. We asked them why they'd come out to the conference, what they were taking away from it, and here's what they had to say.
My name is Cheryl Regier, and I am the Vice President and Provost of the University of Toronto. International collaborations are absolutely critical to all world-class universities, and the Asia-Pacific region is one particular area where University of Toronto and other universities in North America are increasingly working to collaborate.
It's a very exciting region.
Very exciting region, and certainly an area where we can learn a lot from particularly industry partnerships that are occurring in this particular region.
Yes, my name is Alan Laos, and I'm for Vice Chancellor, look after research performance and developments. I'm working in the Swinburne University of Technology in Australia. Now their whole economy is growing very fast in Asia-Pacific regions, and all of you should know about the doing a good research, we actually need financial support. If the economic situation is good in Asia-Pacific region, basically it benefits to a lot of universities. So that is the reason why there's a lot of good researchers from other countries come to these regions and develop their own research areas. And now you can see there's a lot of research strength actually developed in this region.
And when you at Swinburne look for international collaborations, do your eyes go first to the West, to the established HE systems, or do your eyes go to your more regional neighbours?
No, this, to be fair, we are not just looking at the region, we are looking at the expertise in registering in particular areas. For example, we also have some sort of collaboration with Europe in Industry 4.0 in Germany, because they are very strong in all this kind of industry revolution stuff. So we still have a lot of collaboration with that area. But in terms of the material science, in terms of the product design, basically we're working in the Asian Pacific region with a lot of local enterprise and also the universities as well.
Okay, my name is Alison Beavis. I'm the Deputy Dean of the Faculty of Transdisciplinary Innovation at the University of Technology, Sydney. Well, certainly speaking from the perspective of an Australian university, it's our proximity to our partners in Asia that is such an exciting opportunity. There's such a growth and an attitude to do wonderful research amongst all of our partners. So being, right in the centre, or really not in the centre, but close to all of that action, there's some great opportunities there.
And what are your takeaways from this summit?
Oh, there have been so many. The insights into some of the ranking data and how, you know, different countries are performing, fantastic to see that. And understanding how a research strategy is being implemented, you know, across the region, you know, universities at different levels in their trajectory and their sort of the time since they've started. It's been a great conference to connect with the leaders from those unis.
Hello, I'm Kartar Singh. I'm the Director for International Relations at SRM University, which is a multi-stream university based in Chennai. What has been most useful about this meeting is getting in touch with people who are from a very distinctive background from different geographical regions and sharing experiences and thoughts about what the issues are in promoting international cooperation and research excellence and how we might work together in promoting this.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.